Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Well, it's looking likely that schools will remain closed for several more weeks, followed by some phased reopenings. And Taoiseach Micheál Martin has stated that there will be a Leaving Cert announcement coming soon following calls for the assessed grade model to be offered to all of this year's Leaving Cert students. Now, on the line to tell us more about what we can expect in the coming weeks and looking ahead to this year's Leaving Cert state examinations, I have Midlands-based guidance counsellor Betty McLaughlin. Good morning, Betty. Great to have you back. First of all, Betty, what is your reaction to the government announcing that they're examining alternative options for assessing the Leaving Cert this year?
Well, Steve, I'm delighted that they are, because the level of anxiety that the uncertainty brings for the students, you know, and I mean, it's uncertain times for everyone, and it has been difficult for the department to work on a plan. But I'm delighted for students that there definitely does seem, you know, there will be an easing of mind and some clarity around what's happening very soon, because I know there are intense talks going on looking at alternative options and looking at what best can they do to support these students who really have been through a dreadful time. They missed school last year, they missed again this year, then they thought they were coming back and they didn't get back. Again, there were mitigating factors against that and nobody could help it, but it hasn't helped their anxiety. So I would say just hold firm, keep studying away there. Keep at it as best you possibly can, and the resilience that you have shown and learned through this is going to stand to you for the rest of your life. And also keep in mind to doing a bit of research, which I know is an extra challenge, about looking at what career path you're hoping next year. The deadline for the CAO to register, that is coming up on the 1st of February. So really, you know, they have a lot of things on their mind, but there is support out there for them. And please do contact your school, contact your guidance counsellor for a virtual appointment with them. At the moment, they're available in all schools to support Leaving Cert students.
That's a good point, Betty. I have a Leaving Cert student in my household at the moment. Yeah, and it is hard for her. And one of the things is that not all students want the same. Some of them would be quite happy just to go for this continual assessment, but others say no, we could really do with the exam. And my daughter, she's aiming high. So she wouldn't have confidence that the predicted grades would work for her, you know. So she is hoping for exams, but it is tough, isn't it?
It's very tough to
stay motivated and also to know what to concentrate on, because it could be, well, maybe, you know, my assignments, my kind of weekly assignments are more important, because you know there could be some sort of predictive grades, or maybe my mocks are going to be judged, go towards predictive grades, and so actually having a strategy is there's no clear correct strategy for these students as to how to work. Now, I always encourage my kids, look, you know, you're learning things for life, you know, so concentrate on what you're learning, you know, rather than being kind of getting very sort of numerical in, okay, well, how many, what will I concentrate on that'll maximise my points? Because, you know, there is life after the Leaving Cert, and hopefully what they learn during this year will stand with them for life, not just for points or whatever. But it's not easy.
It is not easy, and you are so right. They do require that clarity. They're young. And I suppose they can't really decide, Steve, on what option they would prefer until they see what options are actually on the table. What are the alternatives? And will there be a choice like there was for this year's students? There was only 4,000 opted for it, but will there be a choice, if you like, for them to sit the exam if they're not happy with, if it did go to predictive grades again? But really, it's anybody's guess at this stage. I have no idea what they come up with, but I do believe they have the students' best interests at heart. They also have student representation, and they are listening to the student voice on the committee and the advisory board that are deciding what's to be done. So there is all that happening in the background, and everybody is beavering to give them the best options that they can, and they just have to trust and believe it. And I know it's difficult.
Yeah, well I absolutely accept that everyone is just doing their best, you know, and have the students' best interests at heart. And I'm glad to hear, you know, that there's such a kind of wide representation, you know, on these processes. Now, the thing of the expectation was, you know, the hope was that schools would open next week, and now it looks like they could stay closed till March. This is a big challenge for teachers and school administration, isn't it?
It is a huge challenge. The only thing that my colleagues would say that this time round they are more up for it. They have learned those skills to teach online, the Google platform. They have they can more easily identify the students at home now who are likely to not have the IT that they need and link in with them because they're going on. They have the experience of last year. So it was easier to spring into action this year on the online Google platform and the teaching platforms, you know. So that was something that they are saying. They definitely, I mean, we have learned things through the pandemic that we won't unlearn. And that was one good thing out of it, you know.
But well, that's a good point,
yeah. A map and clarity for them, only then can we plan. And only then can the students really to plan. Will there be mocks? I mean, you mentioned the mocks. We don't even know if the mocks are going to be able to be facilitated online until we see what the plan for the reopening is. So it's just all so up in the air. But I would say to them, just like you said, keep learning, to keep on top of it. Don't put things off waiting for a decision. Just work away as consistently as you can. Keep your day as normal as you would for the school day. Get up, have your shower. Keep that routine going. And keep connected with your friends and do contact your schools and your teachers. They have email addresses and everything to contact their teachers. If they're there to contact your teachers if and when they need to, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm thinking this is challenging for parents as well. And what are your thoughts on, like, the work... doing school from home potentially offers some flexibility that you actually sort of see is a child flagging, you know, getting tired, you know, is now the time for, you know, a break, go out and play, get some fresh air while there's daylight and things like that. Do you think that sort of flexibility is something that schools and teachers would encourage?
Oh, absolutely. One of the indicators of well-being is that they have, you know, that they take some physical exercise every day. And there's well-being program in every school now that has been there since 2016. And one of the six indicators of mental health and good mental health and well-being that we are, it is a touchstone in every class and for teachers to remind students about the importance of that physical health and activity and minding themselves, keeping a balance, having their 8 hours sleep, as much of it as they can, switching off the social media. You know, all those things are so important. And getting out, getting the fresh air, gives you that life-affirming, you know, feeling that will help you when you come in to know that it's not all doom and gloom and it's not indoors and you're not incarcerated, so to speak.
So Betty, maybe just to finish off, you might just... let us know when is this announcement from the government expected, and then maybe you could just also recap on some of the key dates for Leaving Cert students.
Okay, well, for starting, they're saying towards the end of the week, but I mean, you know, that is the aim. But then again,
so tomorrow. Do you mean?
Originally, they said the end of the week, but I'm only listening to it on the media as well. But I can't imagine it'll go much further than the end of next week because we've been looking at February when they were due to come back. The advisory board is meeting again tomorrow, and after that there is some sort of indications are expected. Key dates for students as regards their CAO, what I would say to them is, please, even if you're not sure what courses, register on your CAO application form. You can open your account. All you need is to put in your name, your date of birth and a password, and you'll generate that account then and you'll have your CAO number. And unless it's a restricted course that requires alternative assessments like art, portfolios, music, performance, practicals, you'll be okay. You don't have to put in any courses. You have to have those courses in or medicine if there are alternative assessments apart from the leaving cert. They have to be registered on your CAO form by the 1st of February. But for all other courses that you really have until the 1st of July to make final changes, to put in courses, to remove courses, to change their order of preference or anything. So there's no real pressure on students with the CAO, but I would advise them to seriously log in and generate that.
Get into the system.
That's all they need to worry about.
That's brilliant.
Contact your guidance counsellors in school because they are available for online appointments.
There you go, young people. Get the guidance counsellors working. Because they're at the ready, isn't that right, Betty?
Absolutely, Steve. Indeed they are.
So Mullingar-based guidance counsellor and former president of the Institute of Guidance Counsellors, Betty McLaughlin, thank you so much for talking to us today. Spirit. Now, our Prayer Coach series continues today, and that's when we talk about, sometimes we talk about our physical health. Now we're going to talk about our spiritual health. And today we're going to talk about what we can learn from following Jesus' example. And on the line to tell us more, I have Pastor Pat Fitzgerald from People's Church, Hilton Hotel on Airport Road, Dublin. You're very welcome to the show, Pat. How are you?
Great to be on.
Yeah, so I was thinking, obviously we often hear a lot about what Jesus taught, his words and things like that, and obviously they're so important, but he backed it up with example, and at one stage he actually talked about other teachers and he said do what they say but don't do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. But Jesus was different, wasn't he?
Oh, totally different individual. Wherever he went or whoever he came into contact, he had a huge effect on their lives, from feeding the 5,000 to seeing the healed blind. So his life was one of demonstration of who he was, you know?
Yeah, it was words, now words, now demonstrate, now words, yeah. Now demonstrate. And that's the way he taught as well. And you know, it was very key that, the people who were learning from his disciples or whatever, they didn't come to class or whatever and then go home. They actually came and saw, they lived with him, they traveled with him. All of these things were so central, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything he did was a demonstration of who he was. I love the fact that he came and showed the world who he was by what he did, not just by what he said. And, often I think the church is great at what we say, but often we're not seen to back up what we say. Do you know what I mean?
So with
Jesus, he backed up every single word he said,
I have to say that, I love reading the Bible. But by far the part of the Bible I love most is actually reading the Gospels, just reading the stories about Jesus. I just can't get enough of it, and I really do, try and sometimes I spend a lot of time kind of thinking, just one little story, what was that like, and because his actions, as you say, were so central to his teaching, and he was a real person. Are there any kind of particular examples that you might give of ones where he was teaching through his example?
Yeah, I mean, there's a verse, I was looking at the verse this morning, in Matthew chapter 5 verse 13, he says, "You are the salt of the earth." Salt of the earth. And then he says, "You are the light of the world." And you know yourself, salt is a commodity that brings flavor and preserves food. But actually, at that time when he said that, actually the Roman soldiers were paid with salt, and that's how much value it had on it. And Jesus said, "You are the salt." He didn't say try to be the salt. He said, "That's who you are." And then he goes on to say in Matthew chapter 4, just down, he says, "You are the light of the world." And and light brings clarity in a place of darkness. And Jesus, his life was one that brought salt to everyone he touched, and he brought light to those who were in very dark places. And for me, the church, that's what we're called to do, is to be the salt of the earth and also to be the light of the world, that we can affect those who really, really need to be brought into the light. And I mean, the day that we're living in, my gosh, if there was ever a time where we were to bring and demonstrate the light like Jesus did. Now, Jesus came into a dark world at the time. The Roman world was a pretty dark place. And yet, wherever he went, And whoever he talked to and whoever he touched, he brought light to them. He brought joy to them.
And I think as well, like I think he says, you know, you're the light of the world, and you know, you don't light a candle and hide it. You know, you put it up on a lampstand.
Yes.
And likewise, he kind of showed in his life, he didn't, you know, he just didn't hide somewhere. You know, he was out and about, you know, even when effectively there was, you know, his life was under threat. He continued to get out, to reach people and show an incredible ability to give personal attention. Isn't that right?
Well, you see, well, I just wrote this down, you know, the light was, his light was his concern for others. I mean, he had such concern, compassion for people. It's extraordinary. And no matter whether you were a high class, a low class, or whether you were a leper, or a beggar, or a blind, or a cripple, he had such concern for people. And often when you read the scriptures, as you're saying, often it's highlighted that they were individuals. He had such concern and compassion for the individual life. Although he touched the masses, he touched those, you know, great crowds, he had such compassion for your individuality and you as an individual. And you see that right through the scriptures. You see that story of the girl that was dead, the young child, and he goes into the room and he sits with her and he shows compassion and love and he brings her back from the dead. So Jesus always and will always have such compassion for people on a personal level. And that's what I love about Jesus. He really, really has such an interest and compassion and love for individuals. And it really affected my life 40 years ago that he came into my life and found me when I didn't even know him and changed my life. So I have such a love for Jesus because he has this compassion and love for the individual, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And just as you're speaking, I'm thinking... Just gratitude to the people who actually wrote down what he did, because the amazing thing is that Jesus wrote nothing, or you know, there's nothing that he wrote that's been passed on. He left that to others to do the writing, and I'm really glad that they wrote down a mixture of what he taught and what he did. You know, it wasn't just, okay, well, these are the teachings of Jesus. There's that, and particularly in, you know, in the Gospel of Matthew. But it was a mixture, what he said and what he did, what he said and what he did. And it's just so inspiring. You know, I think the only account of him writing anything was when he was writing in the sand. We don't even know what he wrote. But the rest of the time, you know, that was over to those who were following and learning from him to write it down and share it. Now, so, like, in terms of for ourselves, you know, what we can take inspiration, like, obviously, you know, Jesus was the Son of God, but he also kind of said that you will do as I did, and you will do even greater things. So he is actually putting it up to us to take inspiration and modeling, you know, from his life. So in what ways can we follow his example?
Well, I'll give you an example that I read years ago. Mark Buntain was a missionary to Calcutta, and one day he was preaching in the streets of Calcutta, and a beggar stopped him and said to him, "Preacher, stop preaching to us and feed us, and then we'll listen to you." And Mark Buntain says in his autobiography, that was the turning point of his ministry. He realized that they weren't going to listen unless he had done something for them. And he set up a feeding program in Calcutta, still going on today. And I feel as Christians, it's time for us not to speak anymore, but to be acting and doing something, even in lockdown. So we as a church decided a few weeks ago, okay, why don't we set up a system where we get care packets for the nurses in the hospital? And so last week we dropped off over 100 care packs into Blanchardstown Hospital, into Connolly Hospital. You know, shampoo, conditioner, shower gel, whatever's in it. And just to show those people that we care and we are grateful for them being on the front line. So there must be so many things that we can do as Christians. What about dropping food at someone's door that's in need? Maybe sending some money to someone. I mean, there's so much we can do, Steve, honestly. If the church began to do what we say, we'd have a huge effect in this country. I mean, there's so many people in need at the moment, spiritually, physically, mentally, in every capacity. So we need, as a church, to be a bit more creative and start thinking, okay, how can we together, as the church across the country, do something to impact our society, in your neighbourhood, in your community? You know, we did an earth thing. Last week we sent out Vox magazines to every one of our congregation. This week we'll send out Word for Today for all our congregation and for another people that want it. Mm. So there's loads of things we can do. We can send cards. We can send cards. We can drop emails. We can send food packages. We can send care packages. So there's so much we can do. And I think it's time for us to do it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I really, really do think it's time for us as the church to do what we say. Look, just like what Jesus did.
Yeah.
He didn't just say it. He backed up his words.
He backed it up, yeah. Listen,
and I think it's time for us as the church to back up our words and pray for our country, pray for our Taoiseach. And thank God for them, you know.
Yeah,
pray
absolutely.
For them. Do you know what I mean?
Listen, there are some great examples and great suggestions. Bit of challenge there, and,
yeah.
But we can all do a challenge. It's time to get creative. Listen, thank you so much, Pastor Pat Fitzgerald from People's Church Hilton Hotel on Airport Road in Dublin. Spirit. Well, I think all of us are finding that we're probably having too much screen time at the moment, whether it's working remotely from home, online learning, Zoom chats, or just watching TV. The old screen is still there too. And I recently read an article in the Irish Independent about families who are switching off their devices and having screen-free Saturdays, and who are reaping the benefits of having quality family time. Now, on the line, we're going to be talking about that, how to work some screen time in, screen-free time in. And I have Alex Cooney, CEO of CyberSafe Ireland. You're very welcome to the show, Alex. How are you?
Thanks for having me on.
Great. So, Alex, some people might think it's impossible to have a screen-free day, but tell us a little bit about this trend of no screen time that seems to be becoming increasingly popular for families.
Well, as you said, I think over the last year, we've all seen an increasing dependence on our screens as a result of lockdowns. You know, the reality is our devices have met a greater number of our needs. You know, we've had to rely on them for work, for learning, and also for socializing and entertainment. So, you know, I think we have to acknowledge the huge benefits that they provide to our everyday lives. But I think we also have to recognize that sometimes we need to reset the balance or find a healthy balance where we maybe are becoming a bit over-dependent.
Well, I'll give you an example from me yesterday. And I was just thinking about this because, first of all, the great use of it. My daughter is doing piano lessons remotely, using technology. So that's great. But she actually asked me on this occasion, she had to record her playing two pieces and sending it to a teacher. So it was different to a normal lesson. And she, for some reason, she couldn't use her phone. So she asked me for my phone. So I set it up, started recording her playing. And then she said, "Can you move away? You're distracting me." So I had to sort of stay in the general living space, but not too close to her, and effectively just wait. And I suddenly found I wouldn't have thought that I'm very dependent on my phone, but I was looking around for things to do, and I kept looking for my phone. Of course, I couldn't use my phone because she was using it, and I sort of felt, gosh, I'm more dependent on this than I thought, because it really is the go-to, isn't it? The habit is just if I've nothing to do, just, you know, look at my phone.
It meets so many of our needs. It's so true. So we actually ran a day last year. So on the 16th of October, we did this 24-hour cyber break. So the idea was you switch off your device from 5 o'clock on the Friday, and it runs through till 5 o'clock on the Saturday. So we had decided we were going to do this, and it's actually going to be an annual event. We're going to hold an annual cyber break every year in October. Yeah, and it's the idea. And so we had on our website, we had loads of ideas about what families could do instead. So it was aimed at families. And it was, you know, we felt like it was a really good time to do it, especially after several months of living under kind of COVID restrictions and probably seeing an increased reliance on our devices. But as we got closer to doing it, and obviously I was thinking, gosh, I obviously need to do this myself. And I did do it. And I was leading up to it. I mean, honestly, I was literally sending emails and posting tweets right up until that 5 o'clock mark.
5 o'clock, yeah.
And I was almost sweating with the kind of, oh my gosh, you know, I've got to do all these things before I'm not allowed to do it anymore. You know, and it was a sort of panic stations and this feeling of, and then switching off. My kids were literally also waiting for 5 o'clock because they were very excited that, you know, I was going to be putting it down. So I switched it off. There was a bit of a taking it away from me. And right now, you focus on us for the next 24 hours. And we had talked about what we were going to do for that time. And, you know, we were going to do, you know, pizza night, and we were going to do a walk. And so we'd set up ideas of what we were going to do in ahead of time. But I had all this anxiety myself, you know, so aware of it. But actually, I have to say, it was a really lovely 24 hours. I actually didn't put on my phone again until about 25 or 26 hours, you know, later. So wow. I kind of went past the deadline of 5 o'clock on the Saturday, and I held off because it had been really peaceful, and I was determined to do it exactly right and not break it or kind of, you know, fudge the rules or whatever.
Brilliant. But I ask you one thing about it though? Is were you allowed to take pictures?
No.
Of what you're doing, you weren't. Yeah.
So not
with your phone. Yeah. So you see, I think that's one of the things is that the phone does everything for us now. You know, it's not it's not just for emails or whatever. It's also our camera, and for so many of us, it's also our watch and our alarm clock.
It could be a map as well.
Map,
I think Google Maps. With somebody who hasn't got a great sense of direction, you know, you do find yourself really relying on the information that you get from your device. So it is a challenge, but it is doable. And I think we have to remind ourselves of that. You know, and it's not about saying, "Oh, we must," you know, completely step away. You know, devices don't have a role to play in our lives. That's absolutely not the case. I think we need to recognise they do play an important role in our lives. And you know, we wouldn't have got through, you know, all these restrictions without our devices oftentimes. But it is important to take that break and to recognise, you know, the need for the healthy balance.
I think it's the thing of it's great to use this, but let's check that I can still live without it.
No, yeah.
A bit like
it's a little reality
or
check. How dependent am I? And also thinking about what are you reaching for the phone for? You know, like, is it to check directions to something, which is a really useful thing, or is it to kind of call Granny in Australia, or, you know, whatever? You know, those are really positive ways, I think, of using technology. Or is it just to scroll through Instagram, which I'm guilty of too? Is this sort of mindless kind of scrolling? That we are all guilty of at different times.
I think as well, it's important for us to be aware that by using our phones, while they're great, we're possibly losing skills. And one of those is direction. You know, like, so sometimes I think I deliberately say, okay, it would be easier for me to do this trip with Google Maps. I might get there quicker, but I'm going to do it without. You know, and because I think I know the way. And sure, if I'm not exactly sure, let's do, you know, what you used to do, which is sort of follow your nose, and because that's keeping alive a skill that otherwise we'll lose.
Yeah, and I think it's absolutely, it's not just directions, is it? It's things like maths. You know, you find yourself reaching for the calculator. You know, and interestingly, my kids are doing their maths homework and homeschooling, and, you know, sometimes I find myself reaching for the phone to check the answer, and then they're sort of looking at me going, what, can you not do it in your head? You know, we have to do it, we have to do mental maths, why aren't you? And it does make you realise the skills that you lose when you just, you know, have this over-reliance on technology.
Yeah, when you have something helping you, you become over-reliant on it. Now, there's a more serious side to this as well, and that's particularly for children in terms of brain development. And like at CyberSafe Ireland, you've kind of looked at that. You know, what are the impacts on a child's brain of too much screen time?
Well, it's interesting because this conversation has evolved over the years, and there used to be very sort of strict guidance on it. So from bodies like the American Association of Pediatrics in the US, which is kind of the go-to body for screen time advice, you know, they used to have quite clear guidelines depending on the age. Now, the under twos, I think it is still fairly consistent that, you know, best to avoid screens where possible for the under twos. I think that remains the kind of standard advice. Interestingly, what's changed is less of a focus of how much time you're spending online and more of a focus of what are you doing? Rather than how much time, it's a kind of qualitative discussion of what
That's
you're
very
doing
interesting.
Online. Yeah. How you're spending the time, because there's a huge difference, right, in having that conversation with Granny that I mentioned earlier, you know, on WhatsApp or whatever, you know, so keeping up your social connections and using technology for that, or using it to follow a dance routine, or learn a recipe, or play educational games. Those are all kind of beneficial activities. Whereas, you know, there are other activities that, you know, we find ourselves doing online, which are a bit more passive, a bit more sedentary, and you do need to limit those. You know, you don't want to be sitting playing the same game, you know, endlessly for hours. That doesn't have a benefit, isn't going to be developing your problem-solving skills or, you know, lateral thinking abilities. So I think we really need to step back and think about how we're spending the time. You know, it may be that we are more or less on devices, you know, for a big portion of the day. But again, if it's some of it is active, where you're jumping around the kitchen, like my kids there's a sort of exercise, Go Noodle, you know, where they jump around the kitchen and they're following a kind of exercise program, and it's great fun. And, you know, they're having a laugh and they're moving about. And, you know, on a rainy day, that's a really good way of spending time. And as I said, there's a clear distinction between that and this more sedentary, passive experience.
That's a really helpful perspective, so it's not to do with screen time per se, but it's to do with what sort of activities you're using. Now, maybe just to, like, this idea of a screen-free day and screen-free times, I think it's absolutely fantastic. Maybe just to finish, what advice would you give to parents as a strategy to sort of introduce this? Because if done the wrong way, it could really, you know, meet with a lot of hostility and resistance.
Yeah, it's interesting. And when we were planning our cyber break day, one of the things that came up was that we don't want this to be seen as a punishment, right? If it's seen as a negative and everyone is kind of like, oh, dreading it, then you take away from it. You know, it shouldn't be seen. It should be seen as a kind of what are the things that let's give ourselves this challenge. Let's see if we can do it. What are the things that we can do instead? So kind of planning it together. You know, whether it's pizza night or game night or, you know, going for a walk, whatever the plan is, have a plan, discuss it and negotiate it so everybody gets a bit of a chance.
It's really getting across, you know, that this is an investment. We're investing in the family. We're investing in you.
We're going to make it fun.
Yeah.
And I think that, so that you take away this idea that, you know, it's a, you know, and I think in that article that you referred to, you know, one of the families that was interviewed said it was really difficult getting it across the line with their teenagers, you know, that they were less keen, understandably, to put down their devices for 24 hours. So it does need to be a negotiation. And I think it's really important that, you know, you're bringing in their voices so that they get to sort of dictate what happens for some of that day. Do you know what I mean? Like, it becomes a fun alternative experience.
Yeah, listen, you've given us lots to think about there and to act upon. Alex Cooney, CEO of CyberSafe Ireland, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alex. And if you want to find out more and get more tips, you can go to cybersafeireland.org.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.